The From Day One podcast is brought to you by The Bridge and the Made in New York Media Center.
Hi, I'm Nick Bailey, and this is the From Day One podcast. Today we'll be speaking with Regina Meyer, a veteran urban planner and driving force behind some of Brooklyn's most influential rezoning and development efforts in recent years. Most notably, the transformation of Brooklyn Bridge Park from the abandoned industrial space of years past into the iconic cultural and recreational destination it is today. With over two decades of planning experience under her belt, Meyer's a household name in New York business circles. She served a long tenure at the New York City Department of City Planning, first as a project manager, and later as director of the Brooklyn office. She also led projects for Hudson Yards Development Corporation in 2006. Meyer joined the Brooklyn Bridge Park Corporation in 2007 as president, the same year the park's long-anticipated first phase of construction was set to begin. In Meyer's 9 years at the helm, the 85-acre expanse of abandoned warehouses and piers has blossomed into a vibrant urban center of open green spaces, recreational areas, and several new and renovated commercial and residential spaces. Today, Brooklyn Bridge Park sees millions of visitors a year and has won numerous awards. Now that the Brooklyn Bridge Park project is nearly 90% complete, Meyer has set her sights on downtown Brooklyn, taking over Tucker Reed's role as the president of the Downtown Brooklyn Partnership in 2016. She hopes to bring the fervor of revitalization to projects such as the Brooklyn Strand, an initiative to further develop the areas connecting downtown Brooklyn and Brooklyn Bridge Park. Regina, thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about the Brooklyn Bridge Partnership and why people should care about it.
Great question. Thank you for having me. I love downtown Brooklyn, and I think everybody should care about the future of downtown Brooklyn. It's one of the real centers of what is propelling Brooklyn forward, and I think that the future really is going to is before us now. We've seen so much happen over the past two decades in terms of stabilization of the borough and growth, especially in downtown and in so many of our neighborhoods. Now we have the chance to really think forward what a great downtown can be. And it's mixed use, right? We have so much residential. We have new commercial office. We have new retail. And bringing that kind of energy to the downtown is really what the center of the borough should be.
So as someone who's lived and worked in downtown Brooklyn for almost 20 years myself, I find myself frequently, you know, catching a case of whiplash almost as I walk along Fulton or Flatbush, you know, looking up at these, you know, where did the skyscraper come from? Where does this, sometimes it feels like a whole neighborhood just emerged overnight, like while I wasn't paying attention. I think a lot of us who frequent the area have had that experience. Tell us about the root. How did that happen? What are the roots of that?
Well, number one, I hope you didn't have whiplash because no one should get hurt. But most importantly, I think the roots of your question really have their roots in this effort that was passed in 2004, the rezoning for downtown Brooklyn. And that rezoning was a really complicated effort to bring new development to downtown Brooklyn. We recognized that there was a great office center in Metrotech, there was great shopping on Fulton Street, there was great transit in downtown Brooklyn. So many of our subway lines all have major stops in downtown Brooklyn. And we have great neighborhoods in Brooklyn. We have Brooklyn Heights, Fort Greene, Clinton Hill, Borham Hill, all abutting downtown Brooklyn. But the rezoning really sought to do something important. It sought to knit all of those great things together and focus on some of the sleepy backwaters of downtown Brooklyn, Willoughby Street, Skimmerhorn Street, Livingston Street, Flatbush Avenue, in an area that had been dominated by car washes and shall I say, triple X uses. The rezoning was really specific that new development would make a lot of sense, that the scale of that development could be really dense. It was an area that was so well served by transit and had so much access to pedestrian activity as well as shopping. And so that rezoning in 2004 set the stage for so much of the new housing that you've seen and so many of the new offices that we see now.
So the intention of the zoning change was really to concentrate high-rise development to some extent along the Flatbush Avenue corridor to what is now the Barclays Center. Was the Barclays Center part of that zoning redevelopment? And then also, it also limited some of the development in the more residential neighborhoods, right? There was a bit of a push-pull to the process, correct?
Exactly. It was a really, really dynamic plan that sought to put high density in areas that really made sense, like Flatbush Avenue. The Barclay Center proposal at Atlantic Yards was tracking our rezoning. They weren't together. But what was so exciting about that moment is we realized that having this major new investment of a sports arena and musical venue at Atlantic Terminal really would have the ability to bring so much new energy to downtown Brooklyn. So we worked closely with that proposal to make sure that they worked tongue and groove, so to speak. And then you're also right. We really were very careful to make sure that the beautiful low-rise neighborhoods weren't overwhelmed. So a place like State Street between Smith and Hoyt was a place that we were very, very careful. I should have zoning that would protect the really wonderful low-rise character of the street. Also, St. Felix Street and a couple of other streets adjacent to BAM. So we were very, very careful to make sure that we weren't undermining what we felt was an amazing strength of the borough, which was our great low-rise neighborhoods. And I think what's really been interesting about the new development is that people who are really excited about coming to live in downtown Brooklyn now really see their neighborhood as the greater downtown Brooklyn, which includes the low-rise neighborhoods. And that's a really interesting change for Brooklyn, that people could come to downtown Brooklyn, live in a high-rise, but then spend their weekend activities both in the area dominated by high-rises or, you know, going to brunch on DeKalb Avenue. That's why living in Brooklyn is such a rich environment.
And in some ways, the downtown high-rise neighborhood sort of makes sense. I mean, one of the strengths that you would have inherited is just the incredible amount of transit that connects, especially to the Atlantic Terminal area, but even you know, down Flatbush and along DeKalb, Brooklyn Heights. I mean, there's almost every subway line in the city and a huge amount of connections to Long Island and the suburban railways all come through this one very small stretch of Brooklyn, right?
Exactly. The transit access is really what ties everything together and gives everybody the ability to have connectivity to jobs, to places they want to play, to places they want to go eat. And I think it really fuels not just connections for new residents, but it really gives people who've been in Brooklyn this understanding of how it all works together. I was standing outside Flatbush Avenue, the DeKalb stop outside of City Point the other day, and now that Trader Joe's has opened in the DeKalb market, seeing everybody come to Flatbush Avenue and Fulton Street via subway and to do their shopping was a pretty incredible moment. I just sort of paused for 10 minutes there and said, wow, this is really coming together, and it wouldn't because if not for our transit.
Now, one of the challenges for downtown Brooklyn must be, you know, Brooklyn, of course, famously is a city of 2 to 3 million people, would be the third or fourth largest city in the country, depending on how you count, were it to be separated from New York. But of course, it's not separated from New York, and you work with and for the city of New York over your career. Is there a tension? I mean, obviously, New York City has the challenge of attracting business from other cities in the country and competing with other cities for important headquarters and jobs. But then Brooklyn itself has a challenge of competing with Manhattan. What's that like?
Well, I think really that's over. I think when we started the rezoning process, there was a mentality that we were competing for Manhattan. But the incredible thing that's happened over the past decade is that Brooklyn is its own place and it is a part of New York City. And I don't think anybody questions that the phenomenal ascendance of downtown Brooklyn is great for everyone in New York.
Sure. Now, one of the most interesting things about the development of downtown Brooklyn, and this extends also to the park that you had an instrumental hand in creating or developing, is the interaction between things like city-owned property, formerly private property, now becoming public property, and then the interaction with businesses. What makes for a successful, you know, public-private partnership, so to speak, or a successful partnership in the abstract between the business community and the city government?
Well, you know, I think it's hard work and recognition that everybody has to play their part to really realize a great vision in a vibrant urban atmosphere. So, of course, in the park, the specific example is the public-private partnership that essentially pays for all the park maintenance that keeps Brooklyn Bridge Park as one of the cleanest parks and one of the most vibrant parks in New York City. And the development of the few development sites at its edges is what assures the public that Brooklyn Bridge Park won't fall in the river or will always be wonderfully maintained. I think the other aspect of the public-private partnership at Brooklyn Bridge Park is there's this fabulous synergy in partnership. And one of the great things that I worked on in downtown Brooklyn is something you alluded to earlier, which is that it's become a cultural destination. And it became a cultural destination because we specifically worked on partnerships with cultural institutions in our borough, like St. Anne's Warehouse, the Brooklyn Historical Society, the Brooklyn Children's Museum. And those groups really add a really, really rich layer to the park, which I would also posit as a partnership. In downtown Brooklyn, we have a number of examples of what partnership means. A lot of the growth and success of downtown Brooklyn is because of developers and business owners who've really committed to the future of the downtown. And that started with investment, honestly, in the 80s and 90s, with Forest City Ratner leading a part of the effort at MetroTech, along with then Brooklyn Union Gas, National Grid, and Brooklyn Polytechnic University. Also, there's been partnerships way back from those times. Joshua Muss really sought to build the first new hotel in over 50 years in downtown Brooklyn. But bringing that up to the future, and now, actually, what we have to have is success that where the public and private interests come together. So planners working for the city envisage a successful downtown and use tools like zoning and public investment in our public realm. But we need the coordination and the compatible business interests to make that all happen. We wouldn't have a successful downtown or a successful Fulton Street at this point if we didn't have developers like those who just opened the DeKalb Market Hall at City Point, or seeing now the renovation of Macy's, this incredible historic Abraham and Strauss structure, if Tishman Speyer wasn't interested in realizing that office space above Hoyt Street would be a great place. So I think the public and the private really have to come together to see great urban endeavors happen.
Have you always been interested in cities? How did you get started doing this?
I've always been interested in New York City in particular. I grew up on Long Island, but loved coming into the city as a teenager. Found that the excitement and dynamism of New York City was really what kept me going. I went to school out of state in the Midwest, but came back here in the summers and started interning at the City Planning Department, and realizing that I really cared about New York City, and sought to start at the City Planning Department after graduate school, where I really had the opportunity to think of the growth of New York City in a number of places, in Manhattan, in its infrastructure, and most notably in Brooklyn, where coming to the Brooklyn office in the late 1990s, we really felt like we were on this precipice of change in the borough in so many ways. David Walentis was really focusing on change in Dumbo, which I believe led so much new investment in Brooklyn early on. There were people like Tupper Thomas on the public sector side who were making Prospect Park a great place again. And those kind of endeavors inspired me to think about Brooklyn overall. I had moved to Brooklyn, coincidentally, and was raising my family here, too. So I felt that really from the personal level and the street level, that the borough was ready have investment that would really improve the quality of life throughout the borough. We started major rezonings in Greenpoint Williamsburg, in Park Slope, in Fort Greene, in Bay Ridge, all neighborhoods that where community members were talking about the fact that they saw that there was a future and that they wanted to participate in that.
Now, it's hard for us to remember now, especially, you know, given what we see all around us, but it wasn't a foregone conclusion, was it, that New York City would even survive? I mean, if you look at the 70s and so on, and of course, there's now this incredible renewal of hope and this belief in vibrant cities. What do you think has changed over the past, you know, of that period of time? Obviously, by the late 90s, that was already well in swing. But, you know, how did that happen?
I think it was a concerted effort of many, many people. Mayor Giuliani really cared about the safety of our city and was able to speak to the entire city about the importance of safety. And at the same time, people were really starting to talk about how great it was to live in New York City. There was a transformation in Times Square that went from an area where there was dominated by pornography to this incredible place of investment led by major national companies like Disney, but also those who'd stuck through it, the Broadway theater owners who really, really understood the strength of what Times Square and having tourism in New York City could propel and should propel New York City forward. But bringing that to Brooklyn, I think what was specific is that many people believed in the neighborhoods of Brooklyn and believed in our institutions like the Brooklyn Museum, like Prospect Park, and they felt that there was a future here. So in Brooklyn Heights in specific, people fought for public access to the waterfront, and that was the initial start of having a great park on the East River in Brooklyn Heights and Dumbo. The Port Authority initially sought to sell off those properties, not understanding or not seeing the great value as open space.
Now, something like that to happen, and for those of us that remember the park, you know, being a collection of dusty piers and rusting, rusting warehouses, there must be a perfect storm of things that have to happen to create such radical change. Like, what are the elements of that for launching a project like revitalizing that park or that waterfront?
Although community members fought for the park since the 1980s, I would posit that there was a perfect storm, just as you mentioned, in the early 2000s. Because what really happened by then was that Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Pataki realized that their investment in the waterfront would really propel the borough forward. And it took a while for that to happen. I don't think that idea was really ripe when the community started talking about a park in the late 1980s. But by the 2000s, it was obvious that Brooklyn was turning around and ready for this kind of investment. And when Mayor Pataki and Governor, when Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Pataki started the park, they agreed to move forward in 2002. That was a phenomenal turning point for the borough, this real nod that things were going to change. And they committed significant dollars at that time, which, as you said earlier, we started to spend in 2007.
So what were some of the first challenges that you had when you took over management of the park project?
The first challenges was really proving that people would come to this beautiful park and that, honestly, we could execute and build such a beautiful park. We had a phenomenal park designed by Michael Van Valkenburg and his associates, which really, their vision was for a mile and a half of a diverse range of activities, which was this wonderful signal that Brooklyn Bridge Park could be a fantastically democratic place. It wasn't just a place to come down to the waterfront after dinner. It wasn't just a place to come down and to the waterfront to jog in the morning. But it had the ability to be a place 24/7, or at least dawn to 1 a.m. And in those hours, we had the ability to serve such a range of people with an incredible diverse set of uses. And I think that was this phenomenal signal that the park was a place for everyone.
Now, change doesn't come without tension, of course. And there's been tension both, you know, between the neighborhood and people visiting the park, and then also in the development of the park. How do you balance the tension with all the competing interests? And how do you balance historic preservation and keeping things the same with trying to create something that's new?
Well, I think change in New York City are totally synonymous, and I think most New Yorkers understand that and really get that there's a future here and that there is a future in New York City, and a great deal of that is about change. So on that note, I think that my response is that to execute a great plan, you have to have real great leadership. And the Bloomberg administration wanted a great park at the waterfront, and there were some hard decisions. I think a few of them are ones that have been discussed widely. One was sticking to a great park design, as I just mentioned. You know, it wasn't a design that was watered down. They really believed in having a great range of uses at the park and were willing to fund those. I mean, you can't overstate how important it was that Mayor Bloomberg's administration funded pier after pier and understood this was an expensive endeavor. But along with that, they were also committed to a very sophisticated financial model that would help pay for the ongoing maintenance of the waterfront infrastructure of the park and the day-to-day maintenance. So there was this recognition at the very top that that was a sophisticated model that would take leadership to implement. And we did that by the development sites. And you see the success of those development sites today. Empire Stores was a building that was vacant for over 50 years. And I'm so proud that one of the great vestiges of the Brooklyn waterfront from the Civil War era is now being reused by such a sophisticated palette of users, from West Elm to Shinola to great restaurants and public space. All of that came from the leadership that it took to make sure that the Empire Store's buildings would be rehabilitated and reused in a fantastic fashion, but also that it would be a profitable building that would be able to help pay for the park maintenance. That's a sophisticated model that doesn't come easily, and some, the public is sometimes confused by that, but it did take great leadership.
Now, some of the changes to downtown Brooklyn and the waterfront are obvious. Of course, the park is impossible to miss, even for those that never leave Manhattan. And of course, downtown Brooklyn's skyline is changing incredibly quickly. But there's a lot of changes that we can't see that are perhaps equally meaningful. Among them is the real resurgence or growth in the education sector in downtown Brooklyn and the engineering school. The entry of NYU into the downtown Brooklyn educational sphere. Talk a little about what that is. A lot of people don't know that that's even happening.
You're right. Downtown Brooklyn has an amazing educational sector. We have 10 wonderful institutions. We have colleges like New York University, St. Francis College, LIU, City Tech, the Brooklyn Law School, and a number of others. And what's going on that's so interesting is that this fall, both New York University as well as City Tech will be opening up new facilities along J Street that really signals how important it is for education in downtown Brooklyn. And for me, seeing the resurgence of 370 J Street, which was a building that was virtually abandoned on J and Willoughby Street for over a decade, and see the level of investment that NYU is bringing to that, not only their engineering school, but also their art school.
That's the exit for the J Street Borough Hall station, correct?
Exactly.
It's been famously under construction for, 20 plus years, as long as I can remember, literally.
I'd say famously abandoned and now under construction. But that level of investment in downtown Brooklyn is really signaling that students are going to have a great education here in Brooklyn. And what we are doing at the partnership is making sure that there's access for those students into jobs in downtown Brooklyn. So it's a particular, we bring to, a particular energy and care to our educational institutions in downtown Brooklyn.
There's a time-honored tradition in development of, especially in high-tech business, of the partnership between engineering and technology-oriented education and successful businesses and entrepreneurs and startups. Obviously, Palo Alto, California would be, maybe the world's classic example. Is that happening here, too? Is that possible in downtown Brooklyn?
Yes, I think that it is possible. I the scale of Palo Alto or Seattle is something I don't think will happen in downtown Brooklyn, but understanding that these schools are so aware of what businesses are in downtown Brooklyn and making sure that their students are ready for jobs in the neighborhood. So already there's partnerships between NYU and the Navy Yard, partnerships between NYU and various incubators that even NYU are hosting on site to make sure that students understand that there's really a tremendous value to getting involved in business in downtown Brooklyn and the Navy Yard or Dumbo.
Tell us a little bit about what's next for you guys for the Downtown Brooklyn Partnership. I know that there's a lot of construction going on right around the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, and the Brooklyn Bridge has been recently sort of painted and renovated. There's also some stuff that's happening on ground level there too, right?
A few things are next. I think, as you've mentioned, there's a incredible skyscraper district emerging along Flatbush Avenue. And what's the beauty of that is that everybody has realized that the access at Flatbush Avenue is probably the best in downtown Brooklyn. And those new developments are signaling that downtown Brooklyn is a great mixed-use neighborhood. So what we're focusing on is making sure that that mixed-use neighborhood contains more jobs, contains access to affordable housing, and contains a great attention to the public realm. So we really care about what it's like on the street and how our neighborhood is knit together. We are really spending a lot of time thinking about public realm in terms of connectivity along not just Flatbush Avenue, but as you mentioned, all the way to the waterfront, both along the Manhattan Bridge alignment and along Brooklyn Bridge. That's the concept that we were talking about earlier, the idea of the Brooklyn Strand.
What is the Brooklyn Strand?
The Brooklyn Strand is an idea that we can connect downtown Brooklyn to the areas along the Manhattan Bridge to the Navy Yard. I like to say that if I'm in the Navy Yard and I'm walking out toward the gates and I can see MetroTech, I can walk back to my office. It's really just a 12-minute walk away. And the connections really need to be stronger for everybody to really feel growth there is, but also how much access they have to jobs and shopping. And I really want to work hard to make sure that there's access from the community, from the residents of Farragut Houses and Whitman Ingersoll, for them to understand that they're a part of the larger downtown Brooklyn community. Also, along the Brooklyn Bridge, the idea of the Strand is to really activate this corridor that you just mentioned at the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, signaling that the tourist community can come into downtown Brooklyn. So there's a number of infrastructure improvements that we're still advocating for that we hope can really improve the downtown Brooklyn experience.
Now, to play devil's advocate for a little bit, what do you say to people, and you hear this strain of conversation a lot, what do you say to people who think that, you know, the old New York is being lost, or that there's something that's, you know, that there's no place for diversity or diversity of economic diversity, especially in New York? Is that a problem that you see, and are you addressing that at all?
I think diversity has to be addressed on all levels, and that's why it's so important that Mayor de Blasio has such a sophisticated affordable housing program at this point that requires affordable housing be developed in every new project that's before them. And that kind of attention to making sure that there's affordable housing diversity throughout the borough and in downtown Brooklyn specific is incredibly important. But getting to the second part of your question and talking about change, I think that what New Yorkers are feeling is really that they're leading this national movement on new urbanism in the United States. And that comes with change and understanding that we can live in a city that can accommodate growth is a part of that.
What are the outlines of new urbanism? Like, what does that mean?
That means that we shouldn't set our sights on a suburban lifestyle, that living near where we can work, where we go to school, near our friends, near our families, that we don't need to be in our cars all the time, that we can bike places or in New York City. Obviously, it's our transit system that keeps us all together every day with millions of riders every day. And that's really what I think the incredible richness of Brooklyn is emblematic for the nation. And I think that people understand that change is a part of that, getting back to your question, but it has made our city life so much richer. I mean, the idea that something like having new movies in downtown Brooklyn that we can walk to, new restaurants that we can walk to, food shops, and that we can work in downtown Brooklyn, I think those are all things that people recognize have come along with change.
Do you draw inspiration from other places in the world? Do you travel and you know, what about old urbanism? What about the European capitals that are famously walkable?
I love travel. Lately, I've been setting my sights on seeing most of many of the nation's national parks, but I love European capitals as well. Last year, I had the fantastic opportunity of traveling to Berlin, and I've traveled extensively throughout Europe. I think that new urbanism is old urbanism. And I think, you know, there's the point that you just made. Our classic cities, whether they be London, Paris, Rome, Berlin, all have this rich mix of uses, an incredible attention of walkability and open space. And that's what New York City is really was initially known for, obviously in Manhattan. But bringing that to Brooklyn is really, I think, what the challenge has been the last 20 years. And I think that we've, frankly, met and exceeded that challenge, seeing the growth in the borough come from the neighborhoods, seeing so many people in Brooklyn bike to work, and in fact seeing a next generation of people who really started out freelancing in Brooklyn come to start to work in Brooklyn is, I think, what has brought Brooklyn to where it is today.
Regina, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to From Day One, How Brooklyn Entrepreneurs Got Their Start. This series is made possible by a grant from the Made in New York Media Center in conjunction with The Bridge, a news site dedicated to reporting on business in Brooklyn. For more from The Bridge, to learn more about today's guest, or to listen to more episodes of From Day One, visit us at thebridgebk.com. That's thebridgebk.com. From Day One is produced by Kim Thornton, Steve Kep, and myself, Nick Bailey. Audio editing and post-production by Al Sigmund. The From Day One logo was created by Joe Meyer, and our theme music was performed by Jody Rockwell and the Amblams. Thanks for listening.